America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th of January, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. And off we go. Facebook is rolling out a new advertising format called Sponsored Stories, which allows advertisers to prioritize content from the news feeds by turning your Facebook activity into promoted content. Here's how it works. If one of your page updates, likes, app interactions, or place check-ins mentions a participating brand, that story will appear in the column that appears at the right of your friend's news feeds. For example, if Starbucks buys a sponsored story ad, the status of a user's friends who checks into or likes Starbucks will run twice, once in the user's news feed and again as a paid ad for Starbucks. Sponsored stories are seen only by your friends that would normally see your stories in their news feed. However, according to the product's help page, there is no opt-out option for sponsored stories. Coke, Levi, Red, Donor's Choice, and Anheuser-Busch are among Facebook's launch partners. Anybody will be able to bid on sponsored story slots by a per-impression or per-click basis starting January 25th. Already, similarities are being drawn between these sponsored stories and Twitter's promoted tweets, which presents advertisements in the form of content for the site. But Facebook's approach goes a step further by turning the activities of its users into revenues for the site. Facebook hopes that these sponsored stories, also that which they're calling word-of-mouth recommendation, will engage more users than the site's targeted ad. Seeing that a friend has checked in at Starbucks is a much more compelling reason to visit than a standard advertisement telling a user to go get a cup of coffee, according to Inside Facebook. So, our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The poll of the week, Facebook can use my activities and my face in sponsored ads without my consent. And your choices are: clear violation of my privacy, I'm going to quit Facebook. Clear violation of my privacy, I'm going to mumble and do nothing. And I don't care. So far, we have 37 votes. Then, as usual, the vast majority of you simply don't care.
Does the user at least get a cut of the money Facebook is making?
No, and that's what I'm going to sue them. The minute they use my face in something, because I'm a public persona, I make money by endorsing things.
Yep.
The minute they start using me to endorse things that I'm not being paid for, there will be a lawsuit.
Yep.
I'm done. That's not a game I'm willing to play.
Did you hear about the lawsuit against Twitter?
No.
Some guy has patented a method for, how was it worded? Communication among celebrities. And so celebrities on Twitter are communicating. So he's suing Twitter for violating his patent.
Nice. The patent system is completely borked. I don't care what anybody says. All right, so now you've made your choice on the poll, and you've got a lot more to say because, trust me, I know you. So what you do is you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you can then
multitasking.
If you're doing very well, you can easily put in your opinion. And the question, of course, is tell us how you feel about Facebook turning your activities into recommendations for your friends without your consent. More importantly, you can tell us how you feel about this live. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. I'm interested to see where this goes. Will the world be as apathetic as the Soundbites listeners? Or will, in fact, they rise up and say, look, this is, you can't just use me in a campaign without my consent, and without paying me. That's, I mean, that's, I can't, I don't see where that's legal.
There was a big mess with the Virgin Mobile phones in Australia a couple of years ago now. A Virgin Mobile sign, billboard, went up on bus stands and whatnot, and it was this girl with a cell phone, and basically the caption was, "Don't be a loser like her, get a Virgin phone." Turns out they grabbed the photo of her off of Flickr. And the girl was underage.
Oh, nice.
And so the parents are suing Virgin. Virgin says, we grabbed it off of Flickr, and the reproduction rights were attribution. So if you look in the ad, photo attributed to the photographer. So Virgin did everything right. The photographer who took the picture screwed up.
Yep. Yeah.
So they should have sued everybody, I guess, is the bottom line.
Yeah, right.
Sue them all.
Sue them all like God sort them out? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
You hear about the lady that's suing P. Diddy for $1 trillion?
No.
Oh, you got to read.
You have way too much time.
No, you got to read Dvorak.
No lie.
Yeah, clearly I do.
TMI.
Apparently she's claiming that P. Diddy is responsible for Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and the Egyptian internet thing. And she has a 23-year-old child with him, and she's suing for $900 billion in punitive damages and $100 billion in lost wages.
What the hell does she do that she's worth $100 trillion?
I'm going to post that link because no one will believe me now.
I believe you. I just can't not imagine.
Yep. Dvorak, he's got the conspiracy blog. But he always cites his sources. This was down there. It is P. Diddy.
Nice.
Yeah, suing for 9/11, and the woman is Valerie Joyce Wilson Turks is seeking a restraining order. She's 41.
Restraining him from doing what?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
So it's P. Diddy, his girlfriend. Oh, and Rodney King. The guy who was beaten by LAPD.
Can't we all just get along?
Yep, they're responsible for the collapse of the World Trade Center.
Nice. I did not know that. You see what you learn by reading Dvorak?
Yeah. So this is her quote in the lawsuit. Plus, I won a lot of money at the casino in Mississippi, and Son P. Diddy Combs has my chip to my money. I heard he gave it to Gwen Allen and told her, but she cannot cash it in. I want my chip, please help me. It's well worth over 100 zillions of dollars and my hospital keys.
Excellent.
Excellent.
All right.
We're
going to move on now. I understand that P. Diddy has his own life and he can go live it. We will go to the phones. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Brian did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hi, Nick and the guys. I got two things.
Yeah.
One, I called this time last week about interference from running the Tango on my laptop.
Yeah.
With Windows 7.
Yep.
What it did was somehow, something in the process, reset my connection from home to public. It was confusing. It was looking all over the neighborhood for a connection.
Right, except in your house.
Except in my house, right. So even though that has the stronger signal, find that. I switched it back to home. Perfect.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, I'm glad that worked out.
Yeah. And
not that we had anything to do with it.
I've got an old slow tower that I'm training in for a new faster tower, and the hard drive. Should I try and wipe it myself or just take it out?
You should definitely wipe if you worry about security, and everybody listening should. The best thing to do is go to Derek's Bootin'Nuke.
DBAN.org.
DBAN.org. DBAN, Derek's Bootin'Nuke.org. Download that software, burn a CD, reboot with that CD in the drive, and it will wipe out every hard drive you have. You can wipe it out a little, or you can wipe it out a lot. That is to say, you can wipe it out to the point where maybe the NSA can get it back, but your average person off the streets is going to find nothing on that drive.
I tried letting a similar product on Apple go for the 35-way pass. I let it go for a week before I gave up and aborted it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It takes a long time. I don't believe Derek's Bootin'Nuke takes that long, but it does take a while.
35-way DES and overwipes. Yep.
But if you have an older, and particularly if it's an old slow computer, it might take weeks. Who knows?
But they would typically have a small hard drive.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It is a small drive. So it's E-band.
D-band.
D-band. Derek's boot and nuke.
So I see.
Boot your hard drive. Yeah. Boot your computer and nukes the hard drive.
Right. Right. So I should burn it on a different machine, then open it up on the one I want to get rid of.
Well, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But make sure that machine really is ready to be nuked, because when you're done,
it's done.
It's done.
And so I could safely trade that into the dealer at the same time and not worry about it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The only other thing you could do to make it safer is to take a shotgun to the hard drive.
Yeah, well, I'll give that to Dave.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Brian. Have fun.
Bye. Ooh, that means I could. I just destroyed, what was it? I think, because they were kind of piling up, had a field day Thursday, smashed about, I think, 10 different hard drives.
Yeah.
Turned them into maracas.
Yep. I'm saying we should start a skeet shoot of old hard drives. You know, find a shooting place, a gun club.
CDs.
That would let us do CDs and hard drives.
CDs would probably fly farther.
CDs would? Yeah, probably would. I've done CDs.
Yeah.
In the past. I can't tell you the satisfaction you get by yelling pull in an AOL CD shoots out off into the sunset. It's pretty nifty. But yeah, that would be kind of fun, actually.
We actually, at our office, we made a giant Apple logo out of old Apple CDs. And when the guy from Apple came to see us, he told us to take it down because we were violating Apple's trademark.
Yeah,
because it wasn't the official Apple symbol.
Right, right. Never mind that you're an official Apple dealer. Yeah. All right.
We have to use the real Apple logo. We can't use a facsimile.
Go ahead.
Are we okay?
Yeah.
Dave apparently is somewhere else and thinks he's in a whole other set of conversations.
Oh, no. I had to I was doing some other board stuff here that make sure I'm all set there. But, no, we can go ahead and go to this caller.
Thank you so much. Our next caller is Carl from Arizona. Where in Arizona, Carl?
I'm in Yuma.
Yuma, Arizona. How are things in Yuma?
Arizona. Sunny and boringly warm this afternoon.
Yeah, okay. We hate you, Carl.
I'll take
it. Just so you know.
Guys, I haven't called you in some time. I really live in Hilton.
Oh, there you go.
I'm just visiting Yuma.
Well, after your call,
Ustream. I've never been to Ustream before. I wasn't quite sure how it was going to work, but you are a little choppy. I've got a rather slow connection here.
No, it's us. We are a little choppy. You get to this age, we're a little choppy. What can we do for you, Carl?
My question regards Media Center.
Yeah.
It appears as though whenever I'm using Media Center in live mode, that my hard drive is running along with it, even though I really don't need that replay that the running hard drive would normally provide.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's necessary.
It is, because it is doing what it's supposed to do, which is essentially what a DVR would do. It's recording what you're watching in case you want to pause it or whatever and then go back. I don't honestly know if you can turn that off.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about, because I rarely would ever want to go back.
Right. No, I understand that. Hold on, I'm looking that up. Windows Media Center.
Even if you're watching something live, it's still got to cache it to the hard drive and then play it.
Does it?
Yeah, I believe it does.
Okay.
But Control-Shift-S will actually stop that. I don't know if it's...
I'm sorry, did you say Control-Shift-S?
I did. S as in stop.
Okay, very good. I have another Media Center question then, too, maybe you can give me some help on. And it regards the downloading of the guide. I never had any trouble with it in Hilton, but I've connected to my my friend's cable here, and I've got an internet connection, but it's a rather slow one. But I don't seem to be able to download the guide. I was wondering if there's any other advice on that.
What happens when you try?
Yeah, what happens?
Nothing. It just... there is a button. You go to a screen where there's a button that you can click, and it says get the latest guide or something to that effect. And I click that, and I've done that before at home in Hilton, and you don't know, it doesn't do anything immediately. It just eventually downloads it. And I think, as I recall, I haven't seen the message in a long time, I think it gives you some sort of a confirmation box up on your screen later on when it's done actually updating. But here it doesn't do anything. I clicked that box. I've tried it probably 3 or 4 times, and just nothing. It just keeps, when I go back to the guide, it just says no data available over in the fields where you'd normally get the shows.
Which browser are you using?
It's Media Center.
Does
so
that tie in directly?
Oh, it's,
I don't,
it,
does
it's
that
Media
tie
Center.
In directly to a browser?
Yeah. Well, do you this, you don't get an error IE message extensions. Like 20 or 82 or anything like that?
No, nothing. It just clicks that button, which, as far as I know, it's the only button in the software that allows for the update of the guide. And like I said, normally you don't get anything till, and sometimes I think it's a long time, maybe over an hour, that it updates it. Not sure. I haven't really sat and watched it. Sort of happens.
Well, I would. Here's the thing. There are 100 million questions on the Windows Media Center site about this, and their basic answer is either you're not connected to the internet, you're connected too slow, or the guide's not available right now.
Oh, okay.
And that's the only answer they give.
I know this is a slow connection, so that may be the issue.
Yeah,
you could try the speed test website to see if to see what your speed is.
Yeah, Steve, what is that?
Well, there's a bunch of generic ones. Speedtest.net is a generic one. If you can find one on your local ISP, then that cuts out the rest of the internet from the equation. Here in Rochester, both Frontier and Time Warner have local speed test servers, but
most do. And the way you find it is you Google speed test, and you often that's one word. And then your city, or better, your provider and city.
Speedtest does have several servers in Arizona. What's the nearest larger city?
The nearest larger city would be, if it's not Yuma, it would be Phoenix.
Speedtest does have a server in Phoenix.
I have to ask this question. Did you take the 310 to Yuma? Never.
Oh, good one.
I just
Sorry
had to know.
That. Hey, guys, I'm borrowing someone's connection here who is just sitting in on this thing to see what's going on. We're looking at you on Ustream. Would you say hi to my friend Roberta?
Hey, hi, Roberta.
We hate the fact that you're warm and comfortable out there in Yuma.
Love to be out there riding my bike.
No kidding.
That's what I'm planning on doing this afternoon. Hey, it was very nice talking to you guys. I appreciate the help.
Thanks. And as of this moment now, Roberta could see Yuma, Arizona pop up on the Soundbites caller map. But we'll talk about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, in fact, we are Soundbites. You know, I think the Soho show is going to be great, but we really do have something to do before the Soho show.
And
we should be talking that up big time.
Yeah, Rob, you know, of course, plugged it just a moment ago. But, you know...
this is the Rob. We have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and as you heard Ray and Al talk about it, we've got a little friendly challenge going on. And right now, folks, you can get your tickets. You know, you can...
We should tell them what they're getting tickets for.
I'll let you lead into that.
All right, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Jazz 90.1, the first, and we hope annual, Jazz 90.1 Pancake Breakfast. The date will be Saturday, the 12th of March, Anno Domini 2011. March 12th, 2011. It's going to be right here at the Greece Olympia High School cafeteria. Use the main front entrance of the school to get here. And here's the deal. Starting at 10 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we will be serving pancakes, sausages, juice, coffee, all for
our entertainment.
And our entertainment. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. And all of that
we'll be in the kitchen.
That's what I'm saying. All of that is only $5 per person. Kids 5 and under are free. $5 a person. If that's not enough to get you in the door, you're going to be from 10 to noon. The polka guys are going to be broadcasting live from the cafeteria. During that time, we are going to be flipping flapjacks.
In the kitchen.
In the back room. And then from noon to 2, we'll be doing our show live. We're only serving till 1, but you can stick around till 2
yep.
to listen to our show. And it's only $5 to get in the door. All the money, of course, goes to support Jazz 90.1. It's a great deal. And here's the thing. You can get tickets right now.
Yeah, you can reserve them right now.
So you can give us a call, and of course, it's the same numbers, or is it a different number for that?
To request tickets, you can dial 585-966-2660, or you can do it securely online, or even better yet, right now, we're taking reservations right here at the station.
Right.
So, we'll get Steve here filling out the forms if you want to request tickets for it.
We
got different forms of payment and everything else, so we gladly take it. But here's the other thing that I was leading up
to. Yeah, now pay attention to this.
We got kind of a friendly competition going on with the polka guys. And, we sit there and say,
I think it's friendly for all of us but you.
No, even Ray and them. I even got Al going in on it.
No, I'm saying all four of us, and then there's you. I'm not sure it's friendly for you.
Thank you.
As it is for all the rest of
us.
Hey,
I'm having fun with this, and and it's all in great fun, folks. We're just trying to see who can pull in more people coming to this event, whether it's the Soundbites listeners or the Polka listeners. And we were, if you have to call in or go to the website and, want tickets, please tell them that you want this to go to Soundbites. We're just trying to see, especially if you call in, you can have them put a little yellow stripe right on your ticket. And that way we get credit for it and see how many Soundbites listeners versus Polka. We're up against a tough audience. I'm not going to lie. Al and Ray, they've been here, over
140 years, I think.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think they were both, knee high when Ray had to, use a step stool.
Yeah.
To get up here to the mic and the board.
Now he's, 11 feet tall?
Yeah.
Something along that line? Yeah.
It's just one step. So, but, we want to, see who can get more people into this. We claim that, we got a great group of folks that follow us and everything else. They'll come from Buffalo and all over the place just to come to some of our events that we're talking at. Well, here's an event that you can come, get fed, entertained, and Laurel Ann is cooking up some great giveaways.
Can't argue with all of this.
So, it's a win-win situation. It's a great afternoon. Don't have to worry about the weather because it will be inside the Greece Olympia cafeteria. And, come early and get in on all the fun.
Like we said, you can call us now. You can order them online, or you can call the other number during the week to order them. When you come to the event, your tickets will be available. We'll call at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Please have a photo ID so you can prove you're you and that we're giving you the right tickets.
Yeah, that would be very, helpful.
That would be pretty useful. But we do have people come from all over the place to our events. And we have listeners all over the place. And we have callers all over the place. And you know how I know? Because we have a map.
Oh, yes. Explain a little more.
We have a new map. If you go to soundbites.org, and of course, that is bites with a Y, Francis and Cicely.
Very nice job on that, by the way.
Thank
I did not get
much.
Back to you to compliment you on that. But
thank you very much. Soundbites.org/map, M-A-P. It will bring up a Google map with a listing of every single place we've had callers from. And if there's more than one, we've had over 1,500 calls from Rochester. That'll show up in the little balloon that pops up when you mm-hmm. click on one. Now, it's not the whole 20 years. It's just since I've been keeping track electronically. I'm not going to go back and put in 20 years worth of data, but
21 years.
21,
we're coming up on 2.
Right. We're coming up on 2. You're getting old. But if you go there now, you will see that it is completely live data. The call we just got from Yuma is in there.
I like this one that says out in the sticks, Pennsylvania.
Out in the sticks, Pennsylvania.
And Google mapped it.
Google mapped it. Kind of in the middle of the state, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I think this one way up here in the middle of Ontario might be Toronto, supposed to be Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
It might be. And like I said, back when I was starting to do these things originally, I never really paid enough attention. I just wrote whatever I needed to write because I never really thought about it. I went back and cleared up some of them, but they've got more to clear up. We had a caller from Beijing, China, and I just put China in there. I'll have to fix that. But
close enough right now.
But if you go there, you'll see the map, and you'll see where all our callers come from. We've had Hawaii and Australia, and much of the country. I'm very impressed. But of course, those of you who are listening from Yuma, Arizona, and all those other places, it's up to you.
Dory and them out in Omaha, Nebraska,
right.
and Jim down in Scott down in South Carolina.
Right, and it's up to you folks to make sure that we continue to get listeners.
Keep growing, and keep pushing. You know, tell a friend, as the poker guys would say, tell a friend,
and tell an enemy. We don't care.
Yeah,
we'll talk to anybody. We'll talk to anybody.
We'll beg anybody. What the heck?
That's exactly right. All right, before we move on, let me read another news item. We got time.
Oh, yeah.
On Friday, which is yesterday, Microsoft warned Windows users of a new unpatched vulnerability. there's a shock. I hope you were sitting down. Those of you who are driving, I apologize for causing you such shock you swerved into another lane. Attackers could exploit this vulnerability to steal information and dupe people into installing malware. In a security advisory issued yesterday, Microsoft acknowledged that a bug in Windows MHTML, MIME HTML protocol handler, can be used by attackers to run malicious scripts within Internet Explorer. The best way to think of this is to call it a variant of a cross-site scripting vulnerability. Cross-site scripting bugs can be used to insert malicious script into a web page that can then take control of the session. You know, you go to a web page you trust, but another website is injecting code into that site that will be used to attack you. An attacker could pretend to be the user and act as if he was you on that specific site. If you were a Gmail or Hotmail, he could send an email as you. Such a script might collect user information, for example, email, spoof content displayed in the browser, or otherwise interfere with the user's experience. The vulnerability went public last week when Chinese website wuyun.org published proof of concept code. MHTML is a web page protocol that combines resources of several different formats, images, Java applets, flash animations, and the like, into a single file. Only Microsoft's IE and Opera Software's Opera support MHTML natively. Google's Chrome and Apple's Safari do not. And while Mozilla's Firefox can, it requires an add-on to read and write MHTML files. So therefore, IE users and secondarily Opera users are at most at risk. While the vulnerability is located in a Windows component, Internet Explorer is the only known attack vector. Firefox and Chrome are not affected in their default configuration as they do not support MHTML without the installation of that add-on module. All supported versions of Windows, including XP, Vista, and 7, contain the flawed protocol handler, which is one reason why experts believe it will take Microsoft a long time to come up with a patch. If this was only an IE, I could see them getting a patch out by February 8th, one expert said, referring to Microsoft's next regularly scheduled day for releasing fixes. Right? But this is rooted in Windows, and Microsoft won't take chances. In lieu of a patch, Microsoft recommended users lock down the MHTML protocol handler by running a fix-it tool that it has made available. The tool automatically automates the process of editing the Windows registry, which, if done carelessly, could cripple a PC, and lets IE users continue to run MHTML files that include scripting by clicking through a warning. We, of course, do not endorse mucking about in the registry, nor do we endorse using Internet Explorer anyway. So those of you who are using Chrome or Firefox, you may rest easily. Those of you using Macs or Linux, you may rest easily. Only those of you using Internet Explorer are at risk every single time you go to the Internet, no matter what site you go to. So,
as I ran into another customer this week that wants to get into the Rochester real estate website thing they have set up, it only works in IE6 for Windows.
Wow.
Not 7, not 8.
Not IE6 for Mac.
Nope. Well, because there's only IE5 for Mac.
Right.
But the IE6 for Windows.
So they actually check that and then dump you if you're not using it.
Yeah.
Does anybody go to their website anymore? I mean, ever anybody? Seriously. Who uses IE6 anymore?
Yeah, the realtors that use this website have to keep an old version of IE in order to keep using the website to track their real estate listings.
And the realtors have not yet risen up with pitchforks and torches.
Everyone,
come on, you people. This is why we can't have nice things.
Everyone that we talk to, of course, they're Mac customers, and they're told, you have to use Windows IE6. And all the Windows users are upset about it, and the people behind the website are basically saying, too bad.
Well, then people should stop paying to be members of that Realty Association. Yeah. That's simple enough. Well, anyway, our question to you is, do you think a user-administered registry hack is the right thing to do? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We are taking your calls for two reasons today, of course. One is to answer your computer questions, and one is for the pancake breakfast. Our next caller is Reed from Greece, New York. Welcome, Reed. What's your question?
Question is not any above. It's on the radio.
I can't hear you. Would you turn her up, please? What is your question?
No, I guess I won't be.
Okay. She had a question for her husband. She was going to ask a question for her husband. But evidently,
what do you want? See, I'm on the radio.
All right, tell you what. Okay, why don't you call back when he's ready to do this? Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I'm not entirely certain what that was about, as I couldn't hear most of it.
She was trying to ask a question for her husband, I do believe, but I don't know the whole situation.
She spoke very, very quietly, and that's lovely, but my headphones, which belong to me, don't belong to the station, are not of the highest quality, so I apologize for not having heard her correctly. But we're very excited about this pancake breakfast. We're very excited about the whole idea of coming in and cooking and flipping the flapjacks.
It's going to be a blast.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
They're helping out is the Kiwanis, which I happen to be a member of.
Yep.
And we've done this before through the Kiwanis. And it is literally a ball, sitting there, people eating as many pancakes as they want, just sitting around, get to meet other listeners and everything else.
Should be a fun day.
Good time. Good time.
And it'll be right here in the cafeteria, so it's going to be warm and cozy and comfortable and plenty of parking.
Yeah.
Plenty of parking.
And you know how March is,
That's right. So it'll be nice. It'll be real pleasant. We're looking forward to it. And I'd love to know what you think of the Soundbites caller map. Definitely to the folks at Google for making it so simple to do. But as I look around, I see we cover a fair portion of the United States, a pretty decent amount of people.
Yeah,
a couple overseas folks. Word spreads.
The other thing, though, is remember which we don't have in there, the people that don't call but get the podcast.
Right, and of course
there
they don't
other,
put those in.
Yeah, other countries in there. And like I say, there's just a lot out there that do it. And, they're not on the map, but, maybe down in time, they get in there and register.
That's right.
Can they put themselves on the map if they've called?
No. The map is strictly for you. Who call. Well, if they call, I put in the information, and then that gets
That makes sense.
It's automated, so as I hit enter, those data are available in the database, and if you then call up the map, they immediately pop up.
Miracles of technology.
That's right. So if you want to get on the map and you would like your city or town to be on the map, give us a call, and we'll put you on the map. You know the numbers, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free. 1-800-790-0415. We are going to take just a couple of minutes, but we will be right back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and we are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and our next caller is Jennifer from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jennifer. What's your question?
Hi. I don't know whether this is an appropriate question or not, but I just wanted to know about the compatibility of MP3 players. I use a Real Player, and I don't know whether there's, a conflict between can I use what kind of equipment should I use in order to make it compatible. I don't know if this is appropriate or not to ask you guys.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now you use Real Player on the computer itself.
Right. Now my music has been downloaded from Real Player.
You.
I got it off of Real Player's website.
Yeah.
Well, part of the problem
I don't
is
know what would be the best MP3 player to actually have, like a carry around, listen while I'm working out sort of instrument. I don't know if that's a Macintosh or an iPod.
Part of the problem is that no one uses Real Player anymore.
Really?
Yeah. iTunes and Windows Media Player are much, much more common.
Yeah. You can.
You should be able to convert. Well, not you don't need to convert. You should be able to copy all the MP3s from Real Player into any other MP3 player.
Well, then now, have you downloaded these, or are you just streaming them through Real Player?
They're actually on my hard drive. They're on my computer. I downloaded them from eMusic.
And do they have a .rm extension or a .mp3 extension?
Oh, I don't know.
You need to look at that, and the way you do that is take any one of them, right-click on it, and select Properties. It'll give you the full real name, some of which is hidden inside Windows, but
okay.
It'll give you the full real name, and you look at the name of the song, and then it'll have a period, and then either RM or MP3. If it has MP3, you can copy them to any MP3 player, and they will work.
Okay.
Well, unless they're
nearly.
DRM.
Well, unless they're DRMs, yeah.
But let's leave that aside for a minute.
The Real Player website says it does work with iTunes, which would then let you put them on an iPod.
Are you looking at it right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so it says it works with an iPod?
No, it says it works with iTunes.
iTunes.
And then iTunes will put it on an iPod, yes.
Oh, so what you do is you load iTunes onto your machine.
Right.
And inside iTunes,
it will find all the music from Real Player.
Right, you tell it, find all the music on your hard drive, and it'll import all that music from Real Player. And then you hook up your iPod to that, and iTunes will say, oh, I found an iPod. Do you want us to put all this music on it? And you say yes.
Right.
Okay.
And then you wait a very, very long time.
Okay, yeah, because it's USB and fairly slow if you have a large music library. But if they are pure MP3 files, they should work with any MP3 player. The problem is that if the website you downloaded them from has encrypted them with some sort of digital rights, then they may only work through that one player. I haven't played with eMusic yet. I keep getting this coupon to get 40 free songs from eMusic, and I haven't got into it because I don't want to get tied to another store.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, they are DRM-free, then you can move them to iTunes and to your iPod without any problem.
The eMusic website does say that it works fine with the iPod or the Zune players. So
you should be okay.
Yep, you can use iTunes with an iPod or the Windows Media Player with a Zune.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right, sure. Good luck, Jennifer.
All right.
That was one of the early problems with the music stores and media players is that the record companies required this digital rights management so that if you bought music from the Zune store, it would only play on a Zune player. And if you bought music from the iTunes store, it would only play on iTunes.
Right.
And Apple was one of the big companies to push for the removal of DRM, digital rights management, on music. So now almost every music store sells DRM-free music, so you can download your music from any store and play it on any player, which is the way we wanted to have it.
Right. And I do understand their fear. There are a lot of thieves out there. But there's also, you know, the music industry continues to scream about how they're losing money left and right, and they're saying it's because of the thieves. I think it's because of the crappy music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff out there, but there's also a lot of unbelievable junk, and people just aren't buying the junk. All right,
What was the Beatles announcement that they just came exclusively to iTunes?
Right.
And they sold a million tracks in the first day or some ridiculously short period of time.
Yeah, right.
Sold tracks, not, you know, because they're a good band.
For those of us who actually own the albums, that was a big announcement.
Well, that was what everyone was saying, that you've already got all the albums. You've got the mono versions. You've got the stereo versions. You've got the digital remastered versions. You've got the re-released versions. You've got the solo versions, and now you can buy them again. And then there was the box set that came out a couple of years ago.
Who was it who had a box set with it was actually just a thumb drive with all their music on it. I forget who it was.
Yeah, a couple of bands had done that.
That was actually, that would actually be neat. If I cared about the band, I would have bought the music. Anyway, our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Steve, I put in a question. I had to change my whole password and all that because I hadn't used it in a while. So I put in a question and you about doing Windows XP, going to Windows 7 and home sharing. And I said on here that I was having trouble. And you sent back something that said I need to do something with my IP address. I didn't understand a word that was on there.
The usual problem when you're trying to share files between Windows PCs is something called the workgroup name.
Uh-huh.
And older operating systems, XP and earlier, default to the name workgroup. And the newer operating systems, Vista and 7, default to the name MS Home. So those two workgroups are different names, so the two computers can't talk to each other.
Uh-huh.
So you need to change the name of all the computers to be the same.
Not the name, the group.
The work group, yes. The work group. And you do that by right-clicking on my computer, choosing properties, and then there's a network ID tab in there.
Okay.
The other thing to do is instead of trying to connect to the computer by name, you can connect by address. Every computer on the network has an IP address, an Internet Protocol address.
Yeah, I've got one from Roadrunner, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, your router may have one from Roadrunner, but then each one of your computers has a separate IP address.
You lost me there.
And each computer that connects to the network has to have its own separate unique address. And your home router will usually hand out those addresses to each computer, something like 192.168.1.100.
The best thing to do in your case, Linda, is to make sure that the workgroup name is the same for both computers.
Huh? Okay. You lost me 5 sentences back.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Ignore all the rest of it except the workgroup name, and you can change that.
Yeah, right-click on my computer.
Oh, I thought you were actually putting it in
there. And go to properties.
There.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find
it. If you were to click on start and then right-click on my computer.
Okay, now which one? Is this the XP or the...
Both.
Oh.
So well, either one. You only have to change one because one is named workgroup and the other is named MS Home.
Okay, so MS Home is the Windows 7, right?
Right.
Okay.
So let's say you wanted to change the Windows XP from workgroup to MS Home.
Okay.
You click on the start button.
Right.
You right click on my computer. You select properties.
Okay.
Once you're in properties,
It's system properties.
Right. You go to system.
And okay. or if you just right click on my computer, you get to it.
Right.
And select then
system properties.
And then there's a work group tab.
There you go. And in that work group tab, it'll say work group, and the name that's in there is work group in all capital letters. You change that to MS Home.
In all capital letters.
In all capital letters and no spaces.
Okay.
And select OK. It may or may not tell you to reboot. You should reboot even if it doesn't.
Okay.
And then if you went into network, you should be able to see under Windows Network all of your machines that are named MS Home, that are in the work group MS Home.
Okay.
And then you just double-click on one, and it opens up like any folder would.
Well, then the other side of the equation is once you have the workgroup name, you actually have to share a file or share a folder on one of the computers so that the other computer can see it.
This is getting so confusing.
Well, it's the way it is, Linda. I'm sorry, but there's...
I know. Well, because it was funny. I went into, I forgot what website it was. It says home sharing, and it said, oh, this is what you do. Very easy, and I thought to myself, okay, I get it on my XP computer. I get it. It says, you know, I did the whole thing. It says home sharing in my XP iTunes. But as soon as
I'm done,
it goes away.
Are you talking about sharing files from the desktop of Windows or sharing files from inside of iTunes?
What I want to do is take all my iTunes music is on my XP desktop, and I've got Windows 7 laptop that I got for Christmas.
And you want to move your music. Oh, I'm sorry. I did That's not understand you want to move your music.
Completely different.
It's a completely different thing. That's why you're confused. Everything we've told you is not what you want. All you want to move is your music?
Yeah, somebody told me I can't. I think it was you, Steve, told me that I can't have it on two separate systems. So I thought, well, home sharing, I can share it.
Well, yeah, you can copy your music to the other computer. And the easiest way to do that is a flash drive. Plug a flash drive.
I got it on an external drive, and I put the external drive into my laptop, and
And then you go to your iTunes music folder, which should be in my music in my computer.
Had no problems with that, but then everything I had was in a they put it in a separate folder. It took me 3 days to change it over. Now every time I go into
there's a consolidate
iTunes,
library function. Let me post that link too. If when you add music to iTunes, there's a choice to copy the music into your music folder or to leave the music in whatever folder it happens to be in.
Uh-huh.
And apparently you did the second, so that your music is scattered all over the hard drive. Apple has a tech note on how to move your music to another computer, and we'll post that link in a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, because somebody told me that in order to play my music, I have to have the external drive plugged into my laptop in order to play the music. Because every time I transferred it all over, but every time I go to play it, it says, cannot find it.
Have to tell iTunes that you moved it onto the new computer. Because iTunes is apparently still looking for the external hard drive.
Okay.
See, some people who have several computers will put their music on one hard drive, and then all of the computers will see it on that one hard drive. And so Apple put together the home sharing system so that inside of iTunes you share your music to your network, so other computers on iTunes can see that music. Or you can physically copy the file. So one way or the other. But all the instructions we gave you earlier are completely wrong because you're not sharing files, you're sharing music.
Right.
So Steve will post the link that goes right to Microsoft, right to Apple's own tech note. So you should be just follow those instructions, and you should be able to get it. Okie doke.
Yeah, it's a very common thing when people get new computers. They want to transfer their music from the old one. Apple makes that easy on a Macintosh. They have a migration assistant
built
in.
You know what? No. I maintain that for all the ease of use that Apple has done over the years, and they make things phenomenally easy to use, but I maintain that iTunes is not an easy-to-use system. It just simply isn't. It is easy to learn its foibles and to learn to work the way iTunes works, but I expect more from Apple. I expect Apple to work the way I want to work, and it does in so many other things. This is just not up to the standard I expect from Apple in the way they run the way that iTunes is built. It doesn't. It's not as easy. It's not as intuitive. For example, let's say I have filled up my 5 slots for my computers on my device, or my devices on my computer, or whichever the hell way they figure that out. How do I dump a device?
You go to the iTunes store and reset your device list.
Unless that machine has died.
Then you do it on any other machine.
But it won't let me.
Yeah, it will.
It keeps telling me I'm not on the machine that needs to be removed.
You remove them all.
Right. Then I have to remove all my machines and start over again. That is not customer service.
Well, yeah, because you can't remove it on the machine you're not using.
But there should be a way to do that.
Because then I could log into
my master account.
I could log into iTunes and tell it to take your computer off of your list.
No, you don't own my computer. I own my computer. They're my computers. They're on my list. If I go to my iTunes account, I should be able to manage those machines. It's just it's not well done. It's not well thought out. It's not designed to take into account broken computers. It just isn't, and it's not. That alone is just not a well-designed piece of it. It's just it's terrible.
One of the warnings.
It really is terrible.
One of the warnings Apple does give users before you take your computer in for service is deauthorize your iTunes.
Well, and what if
the machine
dies?
It just dies. So then it's very easy to erase them all and start over.
No, it is not that easy to erase them all and start over.
Very easy for me.
It's easy for you. Yeah. You have one machine.
No, I've got 6 or 7.
Okay, then it's easy for you, but it's not easy. It's not well designed, and it's not well built. It's a really, really badly designed interface. I'm sorry, I don't care for it. It's just not. It's not right. Every time I try it, it says, "Well, you have to do it from that machine." I don't have that machine anymore. That machine is dead. So I either leave it in, or I wipe them all out and have to go back and do it again. That's not user friendly. It just simply isn't. All right, sorry. I just that was my little rant for the day. I just don't think it's a good.
You're allowed.
It's a good way. I am loud. It's just not a good way to do things. And I'm not impressed.
Well, some, you know.
That's right. I don't use iTunes anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter to me anymore.
Well, I still use it for my iTouch. I still love that thing.
See, I have my Droid, and I'm running Linux, so I don't even care about iTunes. So there's three dead computers in an iTunes account that I don't use anymore anyway, so it doesn't actually matter to me anymore.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules.
Longest running. Too many buttons there.
Are you having
fun? I did read about a guy that was really mad because he had one computer, but he was booting 10 different operating systems on it and was mad that Apple had only gave him 5 iTunes licenses.
Well, that's unreasonable. I'm not being unreasonable.
Yeah.
All right. I'm never unreasonable, and if you don't like it, I'll beat your head in with a shovel. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. Did I actually say that out loud? Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we are, at least up till now, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and you are listening to us right here on the truly great and really very nice member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back in just a minute with a whole lot more of some sort of madness and a whole nother hour of Soundbites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're into the second wasted hour of your life for this Saturday. We are Soundbites. And we talked a little earlier about the Soundbites map at soundbites.org/map. Who we don't have, and Dave pointed this out, we don't have the people in the podcast. So all of those of you in the UK and in Russia and in Romania and in Norway and Finland and Germany, who are, you know who you are, you listen to our show, give us a call some Saturday. Of course, it's in the middle of the night for some of you, but stay up. It's well worth it. Give us a call and get on the map. You know, the numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Of course, for those of you in Norway, it would be toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We do not expect you to make a long-distance call when we have a toll-free number. So you can give us a call and chit-chat with us. News item, Amazon has reported higher profits and a 36% increase in net sales for the fourth quarter of 2010, and noted that the company is now selling more copies of Kindle ebooks than paperback books.
Wow.
Yeah, the problem, according to Wall Street, was that Amazon's growth was expected, and the stock still slid about 9%. Amazon reported a $416 million net income. That's their net income, $416 million for a quarter. That's their net income. Their net sales were $12.95 billion with a B dollars. Net income climbed 8% on a year-over-year basis. Revenue jumped by a stunning 36%. Amazon's fourth quarter revenues were the strongest in the company's history since 2000. North American segment sales, representing the company's U.S. and Canadian sites, were $7.21 billion, up 45%. Amazon also said the company is now selling more ebooks via its Kindle platform than physical paperback books. It's the first time that's ever happened in history to anybody. Since the beginning of the year, Amazon said the company has sold 115 Kindle books for every 100 paperbacks, even books where there are no Kindle editions. The sales figures came from Amazon's U.S. sales, the company said. Overall, Amazon has stocked 810,000 ebooks, including 107 of the 112 New York Times bestsellers. Amazon's point about the ratio of paperback sales to ebooks was about as far as the company was willing to go on Kindle sales. To date, the company has never revealed the number of Kindles it has sold, and Thursday's conference call was no exception. Amazon sold, and I quote, millions, unquote, of its new Amazon Kindles with the new Pearl screen, the company said, during the fourth quarter. For the full year of 2010, Amazon reported $1.15 billion, an increase of 28%. Amazon said it expects to grow 28 to 39% in the first quarter to $9.1 billion and $9.9 billion. Obviously, this is a win for Amazon, but is it a win for us? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I'm... I'm a huge reader of e-books myself. I have a Nook Color, not a Kindle.
We got my dad a Kindle for Christmas,
and they're wonderful.
Oh, he loves it.
Both of them are great products. I'm not saying one is, you know.
No.
I just happen to have the other one. But
yeah.
What's really interesting is that a huge number of the sales are in romance novels. They're saying that because nobody can tell what you're reading, you can safely read a romance novel without being mocked by your friends. So they're selling just metric bucket loads of romance novels on these e-reader devices. We have a number of our friends out there who have e-readers. If you have an e-reader and you want to talk about it, we're glad to do so. So give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. I just got an update to 1.1 on my Nook Color. The Nook Color, of course, is an Android device, so I'm waiting for the 1.5 update, which is supposed to be coming fairly soon, which would actually give it more Android-like capabilities and access to an app store and everything else. Now they're going to make their own app store, which actually makes sense, because it's not a phone, and there are some pieces and parts of it doesn't have in it, like a GPS. So you want to weed out those programs so that people aren't disappointed, or even worse, spend money on those apps. So we'll see what happens in the near future. I'm really looking forward to it. I did meet a guy who had rooted his Nook Color and turned it into an Android tablet, and it was a thing of beauty. It was fast. It was clean. It did everything, and it did it well. And I was very, very, very impressed. I played Angry Birds on it for a while, so... Yes, it really does work. It's kind of the new. So that used to be like Flight Simulator was how you told if it had a good graphics card.
Yeah.
Now it's Angry. If you can play Angry Birds and it plays well, you're doing pretty good for yourself. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to turning it into a true Android tablet and having some apps available for it. It's a great book reader. And I can play. Right now, there are some apps available for it. It has the Pandora music service built in, so I can log into my Pandora account and play music in the background as I read, which is really kind of nice for sitting and relaxing. I know that in these days, people don't sit and relax much. But there's also Sudoku that I play far too regularly. There's a crossword puzzle thing that I've been popping myself up the levels on. Sudoku has multiple levels. I'm bad at Sudoku, so I'm still on an easy level.
You need that Droid app that solves it for you.
Yeah, there's a Droid app that solves it. I'm pretty sure that the whole point is to do it yourself. I'm not entirely certain of that, but I believe if you use one app to solve the Sudokus on another app, you haven't quite accepted the point of Sudoku. I'm pretty sure.
The point is to complete the board.
I guess so. And that being the case, you have accepted the point of Sudoku, and you're just doing it in the most efficient manner possible. Now, if only you could beam the answer from one to the other and skip the entire human interaction part.
Yep.
I've also found a whole...
There are several... I read this on Vorak, too. There are several cities working on legislation to ban texting and playing with your phone while you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
After that lady in the mall crashed into the fountain.
Yep.
Wouldn't something like that be common sense? There's so many laws that should be common
the
sense.
The least common element in the universe is common sense. I think we need to understand that. They've misnamed it terribly.
Yeah.
But to me, it's kind of Darwin in action, you know? Oh, I'm sorry, you walked into a pole because you were texting? There's a pretty definite lesson that you shouldn't walk and text.
Yeah.
So if you don't take it to heart, then fine. You get another black eye. I don't care.
It's the old walk and chew gum. No one chews gum anymore, so now we have to rechange that phrase to walk and text.
Yep. Who was it, Dave? You had that story about your horn?
Oh, yeah. I was just as
past... You realize you're texting one of your hundreds of admirers there. I get that. But,
yeah. The boss, because he just bailed me out.
Rob, this may come as a shock to you, but we're on the air.
No. This one, he helped me out because...
Yeah, but he doesn't have to chit-chat with you about it. We're on the air. He can chit-chat later. We're on the air. Rob.
We're fine. I'm good.
Okay, good.
Anyways, no, he bailed my butt out because I misfired and you heard some commercials.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Well, that was my fat fingers trying to do too many things at one time.
Like,
yes.
Text with Rob while you were doing the board?
No.
Yeah,
no.
I understand that.
No, I didn't even have my phone
while
in my
we're
hand.
We're on the air. Thank you.
Anyways, this past summer, it was early summer, and I was going down Culver Road and going down Culver and coming up to East Avenue. And I was going to make a left-hand turn, head on up to Gibbs Street.
And, of course, you're on?
I'm on the trike, you know, and I'm paying, you know, trying to watch these idiots.
His trike, by the way, is not the little pink pedally kind with the basket on the front.
Ooh.
It's a motorcycle with three wheels.
Yep. And,
it's a big motorcycle.
I'm going down, like I say, Culver Road, and this young lady is in front of me. And I go to move over to get into the left-hand lane, and she's drifting along with me. And it's like, I'm ready to cross over the white line because she's forcing me over.
She's crowding you over. She's
yeah. So I tromp on a little bit. I come up, and I lay on my horn. Now, one thing you got to understand, folks.
It's a small bike, but it's a really big horn.
I have my Harley. You hear the horns because they are air horns. So I came up.
Sounds like an 18-wheeler.
And I laid on the air horns, and all of a sudden this girl looks over at me, sees what's going on. The phone goes flying across the car. She grabs a death grip on the wheel, quick pulls back over in her lane because she realized what she was doing, looked straight ahead. And I just yelled to her, and I said, very pleasantly, get off the damn phone!
Yeah.
She would not even make eye contact. She made a quick right, whether she wanted to or not, because I was going left.
It's usually they flip you off.
Yeah, like because it's your fault that they're texting and drifting across the lane.
I don't know whether the motorcycle or me with the do-rag and the jacket and all that was intimidation or... I don't know. But, yeah, I got her attention, and
yeah,
I don't know if whoever she was communicating with, you know, kind of heard it go boom over the other side of the car. And
yeah, well, then the problem is a mile down the road, she has an accident because she's reaching over to pick the phone up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there comes a point.
She was breaking the law when she was on to begin with.
Yeah, there comes a point, ladies and gentlemen, when you have to realize that you're not that important. Your friends can get along without you for a minute so that they can have you around for years.
Yes.
Stay off the phone when you're driving. And that includes, of course, those of you who call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. If you're going to call us from the road, either don't be the driver or pull over.
Hands
we
free.
Want you safe. We love each and every one of you individually and collectively, and we want you around listening to us for a long time.
Or hands-free. Hands-free is fine.
Yeah, hands-free is okay, but then you start getting involved in the answer we're giving you and thinking about it. Oh,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
you're safer to pull
over.
You're just safer to pull over. I don't care what anybody says.
Point made.
I like the hands-free. I just found it at ThinkGeek. The hands-free headset. It's an old 50s-style Bakelite cell phone telephone receiver, and you put it in the crook of your neck.
That's not...
So you're hands-free.
Really hands-free? The very first...
Yours for only $30.
Yep, the very first cell phone I ever saw, a salesman friend of mine had it. And I was riding with him somewhere, and the phone rang. And it was the first cell phone I had ever seen. And it was this big, monstrous thing that sat on the seat in between us. And the microphone, this big mic, was pinned up on the ceiling just over his head. And so we're listening, and I'm marveling at how cool this thing is because he answered the phone. He said hello, and the other person starts to talk. And then he answers them back, and when he does, he tilts his head way back and shouts at the mic on the ceiling, completely taking his eyes off the road.
Yep.
He starts swerving all over the place, and I hung up the phone on him. I said, what'd you do that for? I said, look where you are. Luckily, there was nobody else coming, but he was in oncoming traffic.
We've been watching X-Files on BBC America. They're re-showing the original X-Files in order, and that all takes place in the early 90s. And so we're marveling at the technology. They've got these
lack of technology.
These giant cell phones. You know, you flip them open, and the antenna comes out. And Scully's got this monstrous computer on her desk. She uses a modem to connect into her. In fact, there was an episode where she thinks someone's in the house, and so she picks up her phone and can hear the modem squeal.
Ooh.
What's interesting to me is that NASA has a research project right now. They are going to send Android phones into space because they want to see if the how the phones do in the environment of outer space, because they're thinking of controlling satellites and stuff with the phones rather than with the purpose-built computers that are created, because the phones are so much cheaper.
They've got more power in them than anything that got us to the moon.
I think that'd be a problem in speed. They're doing 17,000 miles an hour. It's got to switch from tower to tower to tower so fast.
No, I believe they're going to be built in. They've got GPSs.
Yeah.
They've got built-in processing power. They've got communications if you need it.
Yeah.
So all they really need is the hookup to whatever, and they just run a purpose-built program.
Take a microcell with them.
Well, they could do that, but yeah. How often do those things really communicate back for the computer running the satellite?
Yeah.
Mostly, and if they need to do that, you just hook up to the communications that are in the satellite already.
I saw a NASA video years ago when they were testing laptops in space, and the old floppy disk where you push the button and the disk would eject. It ejected and kept flying straight across the shuttle bay because there's no gravity to make it fall to the floor.
Right.
So you push the button, and so they were playing with all these laptops where they push the button and fire them at each other. And
talking about dial-up, though, I had a client this week. I was over at their house, and they literally got ticked off at me because, one, they had a rootkit error, which meant the machine had to come back with me anyways because I wasn't going to get it. And I said, the other thing is you're only on Service Pack 2 for Windows XP, and you need Service Pack 3.
Right.
And I said, I need to get that on your machine. She goes, well, can't you do it here? I says, you've got dial-up. Well, yeah. And again, and I've told this story before, I sit there and say, well, what are you having for dinner? And do you have the spare room?
And breakfast.
Because it's going to take too long. I've got to take it back to the shop. She goes, well, that's going to be awful inconvenient. And I go, well, right now you can't use it anyways because it has a rootkit.
That's the usual thing. Well, I can't be without my computer. It's broken. You're already without it.
Yeah.
You're right.
And me taking it back to the shop, I can do it a lot faster. And, oh, you still have dial-up. No offense. If that's all you can, you need and that type of stuff, that's fine. I'm not criticizing that one bit, but for me to do my job properly and in a timely manner, when you're paying me by the hour to sit there and watch the little bar slowly go from 0 to 100% to download various service packs and anything else.
I just had to do this for a customer last week. After you get SP3 in, there's 117 updates on top of SP3. We did SP4.
Yep, exactly.
Roll up those updates.
And what happens if the thing drops?
Then they got to start over again because
it's
gonna
start over again. Exactly right. All right, we're gonna take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Please give us a call if you're calling in. Hang on, we'll get to you in just a second. There's only so many of us doing so many things here, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the great member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have George from Greece on the phone. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Good morning, fellas. Good afternoon. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon.
I have a question concerning some difficulty I have downloading my email.
Uh-huh.
I'm working with Outlook 2003. And it seems that when I press the F9 key to do the download, it sits there and kind of grinds away, and invariably, probably 80% of the time or more, it times out, and it comes up with a little message in the dialog box that says the operation timeout. I was waiting for a response from the POP server. Pressed F9 again, and usually it grinds a while, and things begin to come through. And this may be true when I have, say, one or two emails, or I rarely get more than four or five, but it just seems that this sitting there grinding away doesn't seem right to me.
Are you on dial-up?
No, I'm on high speed with Frontier.
It really is one of a couple of things. it could simply be that whatever is this coming from your ISP's email account, or are you on an email account somewhere else?
No, I'm on an email account with my DSL.
Okay.
And let me say the timeout period is about like 80 seconds, so it's not as if it's it's unreasonably short.
It's usually a 60-second timeout. You can somewhere in Outlook there's a setting to increase the timeout, but what I've seen happen sometimes is there's a message stuck in the mailbox, and so if you log into the webmail and try to delete the first few messages, which are probably junk mail anyway, then go back to Outlook and try re-downloading again. That sometimes works.
I've had that experience before when there was a big item in there or something was kind of stuck.
Right.
But this is just day in and day out, and it's nothing resembling the situation that you described.
Well, but have you logged into the web portal?
I have before. I don't usually.
No, I mean now, for when you're having this problem now.
Oh, I have, yes.
And there's nothing unusual there at this moment?
No. Hang on a minute. I didn't. I just cleared it out, and it's probably not going to have anything sitting there waiting. So, yeah, both tasks have been completed here because when I previously went in just to acquaint myself with it before I called you, it cleared out all of the messages, which was a total of two.
Right. And you looked both in the inbox and in the trash and in every place else.
All the different folders.
In the trash?
Yeah, there's different folders you can look in on your webmail. A lot of times the webmail services will show you a trash folder. It will show you a sent folder.
Okay, I guess I wasn't aware of the trash folder. What would normally be in there?
Items that are flagged by the ISP as junk are often put in there. When you delete something, it often goes into the trash. Depends on how you set it up. It may go into the trash, and then you still have to empty the trash in order to be able to clean that out. And that may be your whole problem. It may be that you've got so much junk in the trash that your system is just simply very, very slow now because the computer at the other end has to sort through all your messages in order, including the ones in the trash, in order to get to the ones that are good. Only once you delete them will they really go away.
And are there two different trash bins then? I think of one that I have at my computer part of Windows.
It depends on how it was set up.
And there's a second trash bin in Outlook in your email program that mail goes into that you've marked for trash. And then there's the third trash on the webmail server that the webmail interface to your email puts trash in when you've deleted a message on the webmail system.
And the first thing I would do is log into that web thing and look at all the folders and delete all the messages from them you don't want.
Okay. Let's see. There was trash 1, 2, and 3. I understood number 1. How do I get to number 2?
In Outlook, there's a trash folder.
Okay.
Or deleted items wastebasket or that's named something like that. Things that you delete in Outlook go into this deleted folder to let you undelete them later on, and eventually they'll delete themselves based on the settings you have. Typically, what they delete once a month or something like that.
Right. But if that's a huge amount of stuff, it could also be slowing your system down.
I just was peeking in there while you were speaking, and it doesn't look like, there may be 30 or 40 items.
Right. And how many of them have large attachments?
No.
Well, still, can't hurt to get rid of them once you don't need them anymore.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah. Sort of, the last thing to try is in Outlook, delete that account, quit Outlook, relaunch Outlook, and recreate it again.
Right. The problem could well be not, but you'll lose all your mail you've saved if you do that. The problem may not, in fact, be at the ISP at all, and it may be an Outlook problem. Outlook, God knows, has its problems.
Mm-hmm.
There is that inbox repair tool built into Windows you could try running.
Okay.
How do you get to that? Let me find that in the list. I think we've had it on our link list before.
Yeah, we've done a link before.
Okay.
Basically, it is fairly common in Microsoft Outlook for the mailboxes to become corrupted. So Microsoft has included with Outlook and Outlook Express a mailbox repair tool.
Scanpst.exe. So if you just go to start, run, and type that in there. Scanpst, which is the personal storage thing. From Outlook.
Sure, the T stands for thing. I'm sure of it.
Yep. Yeah, scanpst.exe. Sure. That will try to fix your Outlook mailboxes.
You would agree, though, that to wait for the timeout in excess of 60 seconds as a normal process, that's abnormal. Shouldn't have to be doing that.
You shouldn't have to under normal circumstances, no.
Okay.
So clearly there is some sort of connectivity issue, and like I said, it's in one of two places. It's either in the Outlook, somewhere in Outlook on your machine, or there's something clogging it at the other end. We see that a lot. Because nowadays some spam stuff that gets sent out is just gigantic with pictures of Viagra ads and all kinds of other things in them. And they get kind of clogged in the, and it's not just any one ISP, it's all of them. It gets clogged in their mail system. So the only way to get rid of it is to go into the webmail version and delete those messages from there. And the same thing applies to, trash and deleted items and whatever it is it's called everywhere else as well. The only way to get rid of some of that stuff is from the webmail interface.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I appreciate the help.
Yep, thanks. Mail is getting more and more confusing. That's one of the reasons so many people are going to Gmail. You can get Gmail in your, for example, Thunderbird or whatever. You can do it as IMAP. But you can also use it up there, and they give you an awful lot of storage and an awful lot of other good things. All right, our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Thank you, sir. I'm going to sound like Uncle Dave for a few minutes.
There you go.
I've had DSL put in from Frontier after I received a letter telling me how reliable and how fast they are. I've had about 8 to 10 technicians down. I can't watch a movie from Netflix. I can't watch YouTube. And I'm wondering, is it me that this thing should be a little faster? I do a speed test, and it's about 1.0. And they're telling me the best they could do is make it as a backup to Roadrunner.
Yeah, it sounds like you're just too far away.
$300 to cancel it. Right.
Well, if it's not working, they shouldn't charge you the early termination fee.
Yeah, they can't deliver reasonable service.
Well, part of the problem is when the companies offer services, so both Time Warner and Frontier, it's always up to. DSL offers up to 8 megabit. Roadrunner offers up to 15 megabit. So they are giving you up to 8 megabit. You're getting 1, and 1 is up to 8. But if it's unreasonably slow, you're probably too far from the phone switch, or it could be the wiring in your house is too old. You may get them to run
They have been wonderful coming to the house, but they all tell me it's too far away.
Yeah.
And they told the Frontier people, we cannot compete because these folks are too far away, and you shouldn't be telling them they're getting high-speed internet when they can't use it for video streaming.
Well, it is higher than modem, so they're technically correct, which is the best kind of correct. But, that's the problem people run into. Mm-hmm. If you're too far from the phone switch, you just can't get any faster than that, and you may have to go back to Roadrunner. You can check out Clearwire, which is wireless internet. That's a little slower than Roadrunner, but again, depending on your area, maybe
they've
faster.
They've also been having some trouble lately.
Yeah.
One thing I will balance what you said. When I got DSL installed at my house, they told me the max I could get was 4, and I get 6.
Yeah.
Of course, you called and
complained.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, the reality is that DSL is distance dependent, and it may well be that you are simply too far away, and that you'll need to go back to Roadrunner or in Irondequoit. I think that's really your only other choice.
Yep.
Well, if I could ask you guys, if you would just tell me yes or no, am I being unreasonable by thinking that this thing is not providing high speed internet service?
Not by my definition.
No.
Frankly, by my definition, 10 megabits isn't fast, isn't high speed.
Yeah.
But the reality is that I'm not a lawyer, and I don't even play one on television anymore. So, if you want to talk reasonable, you we're not the people to talk to. God knows nobody's accused me of being reasonable in years. But I agree with you. I would not call that high speed, nor would I be pleased with them for expecting an early termination fee to get rid of it. But again, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, you just got to be forceful and say that, you know, this is totally unacceptable. I was told that it was going to get this, and, you know, I don't expect to pay the disconnect fee because you folks didn't deliver.
Right.
And, you know, if you have to, you know, just be nice and see what they'll do.
Well, you know, I did speak to a guy. You don't know who you're speaking to. I think he was from Florida. He said, well, we'll disconnect it for you, no charge, if you give us 4 days to work on it. I gave him 2 weeks to disconnect it five times in that 2 weeks. And now I call up, and they have no record of me speaking to that guy, despite a fellow coming over to the house.
Bob, the reality is that you know, we can sit here and complain to each other all day, but the reality is that what you need to do, if they can't give you any satisfaction, the next step is a lawyer. I got nothing else I can say.
Yeah, you're going to file a complaint.
I'm sorry. You know, and the reality
is... I feel bad that you guys have them sponsoring you in some way or something, but I appreciate the thought. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the problem with DSL is that it's limited to the length of cable to your location. So if you happen to live too far from the phone switch, then you just can't get high-speed internet. And with cable internet, the more people in your neighborhood using it, the slower it is. So that there are limitations to both technologies.
Right.
And it's all based on where you live and how many other people around you.
Right. And as I've said many times, the reason that I originally went with DSL is because at that time, there were so many people on my head end for Time Warner that I was getting really terrible service at night.
Yep.
You know, if I... 3 in the morning, I owned the internet. 2 in the afternoon, if I were home, I owned the internet. But, you know, from 7 o'clock until midnight, it was terrible. And so, you know, I'm sure they eventually, there's more head ends in my neighborhood, and I'm sure that they fix
it. Yeah, all the companies are trying, or well, at least saying they're trying to expand their networks to make things better.
And it really is a tough problem because, you know, you look at some other countries that we consider third world, mm-hmm. and they've got massively fast internet, but they started later. Well, but they started later. You know, a lot of the technology that's around nowadays is simply old technology, and to rip it all out and replace it will cost an exceptional amount of money.
And because the phone system is so old, a lot of the wires here in Rochester especially are more than 100 years old.
Yep.
And it costs a lot of money to replace them.
You know, if you're starting from scratch, if you have no infrastructure, you put in the latest infrastructure and everybody wins. But if you already got infrastructure, ripping it out and replacing it actually costs more. So it's a tough choice.
I read an interesting essay on Stop the Cap about one of the cities where Frontier bought Verizon's local telephone service. They ended up buying their Fios business. And well, Frontier is offering people to upgrade to DirecTV internet. Because that Fios is, that's nothing.
That's only 50 megabits.
Yeah, and to get that in and how much cheaper it might be, get a third party in here, a little more competition. Because right now, you got A or B, reliably.
Well, you know what I'm really waiting for? Seriously? I'm waiting for Google to realize that they're not going to be able to push out the Chrome OS, the Chrome operating system, because there are so many places you can't use it because you have to be in the cloud to do it. And when they start coming into cities and offering wireless access for cheap, fast, cheap wireless access, so that you can run your Chrome OS tablet anywhere at all.
What are we talking megabits?
I'd say, to me, high speed is 10 megabits minimum.
Well, on mobile wireless, it's a whole different set of technologies, and you're lucky to get 1 or 2 megabits.
I'd say 4 megabits. I'm not talking about, GSM or CDMA. Yeah. I'm talking about WiMAX, wireless, actual wireless signal.
Yeah.
Well, what's the 4G do?
4G is faster, but it's still
if you tether it to,
and all the,
still small. It's still small.
All the
compared
all the,
to you know real what? Wire like wireless in your home.
Yeah, 3 to 4.
Yeah, 4G is usually 3 to 4. But all the companies have different definitions of 4G. Sprint's 4G is WiMAX. Verizon's 4G is LTE, and they're incompatible with each other.
Right. What we're talking about here, folks, is if you were to take your phone and, say, tether it to, your laptop and that and do it that way using your phone, which has 4G.
Right, but yeah. What I'm talking about is real wireless.
Well,
so
that's
the point where you only need the wireless radio that's already in your laptop. You don't need a SIM card or anything
right.
else.
Well, that's one of the things in now the Google Chromebook reference platform is it's got 3G Wi-Fi built in, and you get 100 megs a month free.
Right, which is not bad. Free is good no matter what it is. 100 meg is not going to be a lot, but it will let you check your email. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites, a member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And patiently waiting on the line is Gilbert from Webster. Welcome, Gilbert. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Actually, on the same topic you were just on, coincidentally, you wound up on my topic. So,
there you go.
What I was interested in asking about is, I'm working up to buying an iPad, which at least will have Wi-Fi, and I have a laptop with Wi-Fi, which I use, here and about around the house. And I've noticed that they're coming out with these, like the mobile hotspots, Sprint offers a 4G mobile hotspot and so forth and so on. And I just was interested in your commentary about how these things work out. Is that a good way to go? Should you buy 4G in your device? Should you have hotspots? Can you take it in your car? Can you carry it on your back?
Yeah, that's the advantage of the mobile hotspots, the MiFi hotspot from Sprint and Verizon, and I forget what AT&T calls theirs. And they can operate on multiple devices, so you can have phones and computers and pads and tablets all running off of it. Usually they say up to five devices. The other side of the coin is that a lot of cell phones will have wireless hotspot functionality built into the phone. You pay an extra data fee. Sometimes it's included in your data fee. And it turns your cell phone into a mobile hotspot. And then devices will often have their own cellular 3G built into the device itself. So it's you can go any of the three ways.
The big difference, of course, is if you have 3G in multiple devices, you have multiple contracts with cell carriers. Whereas if you have a mobile hotspot or you tether your phone, you only have one contract.
The big risk there is how much data you're using. The mobile hotspots typically have a 2 or 3 meg data limit. Verizon's lowered their limit to 2 gigs. And increased.
Which they're calling unlimited. I do not think that word means what they think it means.
Well, after 2 gigs, you can still use it. They just start charging you $20 a gig.
That's still not.
Yes, $20, $20 a gig.
$20 American dollars.
Yeah, the first 2 gigs are $20, so you're paying $10 a gig. And then after 2 gigs, it's $20 a gig. And
God, I need to own a phone.
If you consider a typical 2-hour movie is about 3 gigs, you don't want to be streaming movies over 3G.
Yeah.
So it's
cheaper to take a date in the theater.
Just even
Virgin,
a percentage of that.
We were saying 10%. Yeah, we were saying for a long time that Virgin did have a truly unlimited mobile broadband for $40 a month. They are now starting to put limits on it because it got too popular.
Well, so, and that's of course the problem.
So the mobile hotspot gives you the option of having one cellular bill and sharing it among multiple devices, but you have to be careful about what kind of traffic you're doing and if you're going to exceed your monthly allotment for that one device.
Well, the reality is, look, I understand these are publicly traded companies, and the people they really have to answer to are the shareholders. So if they don't make more money this quarter than they made last quarter, they've done a bad job. But there's only so much raping you can do of your customers before they start noticing.
Boy, I doubt that, but I'm glad you're an optimist.
Yeah.
Well, we notice we complain, but
I'm so cute when I'm naive.
Yeah. We notice we complain, but we keep paying it
because
we're addicted to it.
And they're
now
just laughing all the way to the bank. They don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, well. Well, I think you've answered my question. So it seems like a reasonable thing. I doubt if I would be. I'm not a big cell phone fan in the first place, and I'm definitely not going to download movies over my cell phone. So maybe I could live in the 2 gig limit.
And they always, the companies in their advertising always say, a lot of times they'll have like 100 meg plan for, say, $15 a month, and then the 2 gigs is $30 a month. They always say, you know, 100 megs, you know, that's 100,000 emails or, you know, 10 pictures or 5 minutes of a movie.
Yeah.
So but it's 100,000 emails if, you know, it's one character per email, about.
Right. And other devices actually use the cellular network and don't charge you for it. For example, Kindle has what they call WhisperNet, and you download your books over WhisperNet. That's actually Sprint.
And you're paying for that service in the cost of the Kindle, and Amazon must be paying Sprint somewhere.
Yeah, but they're not charging you a monthly fee.
Yeah, they're hiding it in the initial cost. Mm-hmm. That's why the 3G Kindle costs more.
Right.
So I mean, that brings up a slightly different subject, which is, I mean, I use PDF files for almost all my stuff nowadays, and I'm gradually, you know, sort of kind of ridding myself of the immense piles of paper I've accumulated.
Yep.
But it seems like there are various ways you can get paper into PDF and then onto one of these devices, and some of them seem to make it a rather circuitous loop to get it there. So I don't know.
Well, and don't forget, a PDF document is, in fact, a graphic.
Well, not completely, no.
All it's got to do is have a little. It's considered a graphic.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
But my
it's
point
a text
is
the definition
it's
of
huge.
A graphic image.
If you were to send the text file over, it would be tiny. If you were to send the Word document over, it would be small. If you were to send the PDF over, it's going to be gigantic.
And there are ways to optimize the size of a PDF, but generally they end up being bigger than the original document.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that over Wi-Fi, you're going to be spending a lot more money because you're going to be using a lot more data than you think you are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've pretty much got control over the PDF files, and I don't think they're generally that large, and what I want is primarily text. And, you know, you could really compress those things down. And then
when you create the PDF, a lot of the programs have an option to make a screen version of the PDF or a print version of the PDF. So the screen version may end up being 20 or 30K. The print version is 200 megs.
No, I'm very familiar with the scrunching and munching of PDFs, but that doesn't seem to be the problem. It's the how do I get it down to a Kindle and make it readable in their format, and you've got to have the reflowable formats and so forth. So that's
The Kindle will take a PDF, and it usually looks ugly at the end because the PDFs aren't themselves reflowable. So you can use programs to convert it to Mobi file that Kindle
Mobi
uses.
Yeah, Mobi and EPUB.
And EPUB. Yeah, EPUBs are reflowable and Mobi is not.
Yeah, and so I mean, I thought it was
the PDF
there.
Is not.
I mean, scanning has finally gotten there. I'm not sure the PDF files and the readers, unless you're buying their books. I mean, my portable PDF reader seems to still have to be almost at least a small machine, I guess, in order to be practical with a fairly good-sized screen. Well, off topic, but thanks, guys, and I appreciate your answer and your discussion on the 4G mobile, and it looks like it's maybe an option that I might consider.
Yep,
there you go.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
And, happy winter. Hope we can see spring sometime soon.
It's coming.
No kidding. Thanks. And he calls me an optimist. What the heck was that about? There's also a program called Calibre, Calibre-ebook.com, that lets you, you can read ebooks on your computer with it, and it also converts among various formats. So I've got it installed here in my netbook, and I can read books on it, and it's very cool, but it also lets me convert formats fairly easily from one format to another. So it's a pretty neat product, and of course it's free because I like free.
Okay.
And it does a lot of good things.
One other thing I'd like to cover just before, because we're coming up just about to the end of the show, and I'd like to remind folks, if you haven't done it already, please mark your calendar for March 12th.
What could possibly be happening on March 12th?
We're going to hold our first annual pancake breakfast for Jazz 90.1. Remember, we are member-supported Jazz 90.1, and all the proceeds will help, you know, support this station, bringing you great jazz and programs like this. It's going to be at Grease Olympia Cafeteria. For $5, you get in, and any child 5 and under gets in free. And what do they get for that
$5? Wait a minute. Are you saying that for a mere $5?
Yep.
And children under 5 are free?
Yep.
They get all the pancakes they can eat, sausage, juice, coffee, all of that stuff, all you can eat, for a mere $5?
And that's not all.
That's an incredible Wait, there's more?
Always. Always more here at Jazz 90.1.
And the more that you get is from noon, from 10 to noon, live during the breakfast, you can watch Al and Ray do the polka show. So you come in, eat, listen to polka, and you can't not be happy.
Yeah.
Listening to polka, you can't not be happy.
Oompa.
And they're going to be doing polka music for the entire 2 hours, and then after that, stick around, because from noon to two, we'll be doing sound bites live from the same place.
Right there.
So
in
you
the cafeteria.
Come in, you have a great breakfast. You see a lot of live radio, and we're going to have fun doing it, and the whole shebang only costs you $5.
But wait a minute, we're not done yet.
Wait, how can there possibly
we just keep piling it on even more and more.
Oh my goodness.
Our sweet Laura
Billy
Land
is
literally working off her butt. The folks that do show up and stick around, I hear tell we're going to have some great giveaways.
Well, you know what? It just gets better and better, because there's even one more thing that's going to happen.
Oh.
Because while Al and Ray are on the air,
yes,
we are going to be in the back room flipping flapjacks.
That's a Kodak moment.
That is a Kodak moment or a bleach moment. I'm not. If you can find some, bring some eye bleach, because this may not be something you really want to see.
You know, folks, again, mark your calendar. March 12th. It's a date you're not going to want to miss. It's going to be a ton of fun. And, you know, what can we say? You know, it just doesn't get any better. And Robin, the crew here, you know, since we've come here, just keep doing more and more and more. And it's great events like this that, you know, we're just having a blast with. And you know what? It's unbelievable that we can do it.
Yeah,
and, you know,
us flipping flapjacks, that's a sight to tell your grandchildren about as a cautionary tale.
Oh.
Never to look at anything like
around
that.
Around hot objects. Wow. Open flame. That could be scary.
It could be scary. It'll be fun. And I think that that you need to be there. It's not going to be, it's not going to be something you'll see for a whole another year. So you do not want to miss this event. It's going to be March 12th. We're serving from 10 to 1, but we'll be on the air from noon to 2, so you can stick around for that last hour and digest and play along. We're going to have just plenty of fun. And we're, in fact, done now for another week. And I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. If you didn't call in, I don't know why not. It's your own fault. You can. It's awful easy to do, and you know how. But we will be back here next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening in.